Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back into the Lions 24/7 podcast. I'm Tyler Donahue. We have a full show in store for you as we do our final episode before kickoff at Auburn. Penn State faces the Tigers 3:30 p.m. our time, 2:30 p.m. local time there on Saturday. Showcase matchup, Auburn 2-0, Penn State 2-0, as we discussed earlier in the week. Different paths to get to 2-0 this season. You will hear from my colleagues, Daniel Gallen, Mark Brennan here a little bit later in the episode. We're going to do our preview and predictions for Penn State. We have some freshman notes. We have some commentary on possible player availability and just kind of sorting through some questions as we work our way toward this matchup, players to watch, etc. But first, Nathan King, who does a great job covering Auburn for our 24/7 sports site, Auburn Undercover, he joined us last September to give us a look ahead at the Tigers before they came up to Beaver Stadium. This time around, we do that once more before Penn State hits the road and heads south. We'll talk a lot about Penn State on the other side of this interview and give you our final predictions. But first, here's Nathan King and a lot about the Tigers. For the second consecutive year, we get to reach down south and to our Auburn Undercover reporter, Nathan King, who does a fantastic job on that Auburn beat, breaking down the Tigers. He'll do it for us now. He did it for us last September ahead of that matchup. And Nathan, first and foremost, you reached out early in the week, talked about bringing these communities together on our message board. So appreciate you doing that. There's been a joint thread going on between our sites, Lions 24/7 on Auburn Undercover. Hopefully it was helpful for Auburn folks heading north last September. Hopefully it's helpful for our fans heading down south. But thanks for doing that. And there's been a lot of working together this week. So look forward to continuing that. I know you're getting Daniel on your podcast a little bit later this afternoon.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that we're finally for Penn State. It's a little different. You know, they had Purdue in that first game. Auburn's had back-to-back non-power five opponents. So the buzz is a little different. I know football season started a couple weeks ago, but this really feels like the start of football season for Auburn because it's their first really, you know, big game of the season.
You know, something I covered in a piece I wrote Wednesday was, you know, not all 2-0s are created equal. The paths that these programs have taken to get to this matchup, certainly different in terms of what they were tested. Five losses to finish last season, but a 2-0 start. Have those vibes truly been shaken off, or is there more of a cloud hanging in the air and saying, now prove it against Penn State?
Yeah, no, it's still show me. These first two games have not done much of anything. You can chalk that up to the four total interceptions from the quarterbacks, or you can chalk it up to beating San Jose State by one score. You can pick your poison there. So no, I mean, they in terms of the bad vibes from last season, I mean, people are, you know, looking at this with a glass half full. And I think a lot of people understand that regardless of what Harsin did last year, regardless of what he did to start off this season, he was going to be in a bad spot regardless because of what they tried to do to him in February. I don't know about if any coach would be able to recover from that in a positive way, particularly in recruiting. That's the number one thing we talk about when we talk to people about recruiting is, yeah, you know, we're doing fine. It's just we're being negatively recruited. Everybody's just telling our recruits, yeah, you know, well, why would you even go play there if your coach isn't going to be there next season? And so, you know, it's sort of the chicken and the egg argument. Like, you know, he has to win games in order to start buying the goodwill of the fan base back and buying back recruiting success. But then you have to have both those things pulling in the right direction as well in order for you to have a successful program. So this game is absolutely massive for them, not only to get some momentum for the season, but they've got to find, if he's going to stick around, 7 wins, maybe, certainly 8 wins, I think would keep him around. They're hard to find on this schedule. And so you bring in a team like Penn State from out of conference in your building, and obviously sort of a revenge spot from last year. This is one they absolutely need to get this season in order to give themselves sort of a good baseline here at the beginning of the year to chalk up those wins.
Boy, when it comes to Brian Harsin, it escalated quickly. I mean, when they came to town last year, they were 2-0. There were some good momentum. I think it's certainly fair to say. Then, even with the loss, they were still ranked inside the top 25. It was kind of viewed as a relatively favorable loss coming out of Penn State. Lo and behold, get to 4-1, play Georgia, get smacked down, and from there on, it's a spiral for them. They finished 6-7. Can you talk us through this offseason a little bit? Because I know a lot of Penn State fans on the peripheral kind of sort of know what the Tigers dealt with, but can you set the stage for just why there is such a momentous opportunity for Auburn, or if they lose this one and they lose it poorly, why it could get really ugly in a hurry?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny. You look at last season, and even some of the Auburn players talked this week about, you know, maybe if we had gotten that game, you know, it would have given us some, you know, the tight end in particular, John Samuel Schenker, was really kind of harping on that. But it's interesting that he said that, because I understand Auburn had a bad end to the season. They absolutely did, 5 straight losses. But after this game, I mean, they started 6-2 on the year and were number 14 in the college football playoff rankings. Whereas Penn State, you know, ended up, both teams, neither team necessarily had the season that they wanted to. And so, again, I think for me, it goes back to, I don't know if this game necessarily is one that's going to propel you forward to a successful season either way. Maybe a little bit more for Penn State, you know, getting some good footing under them. But for Auburn, it's just, they have so many other opportunities down the line and so many other difficult matchups. In terms of the offseason, I mean, it was shocking to all of us what happened back in February. It was certainly unlike anything I'd ever seen. You know, a lot of people who are a lot older than me on the beat as well. Despite how crazy Auburn is on a consistent basis, trying to get a guy fired and he's phoning in to ESPN, taking shots back at the higher ups while he's in Mexico. It's, you know, just not necessarily, literal Mexican standoff is not something we see very often. And so, you know, it the glass half full way to look at it once he was retained was, you know, this entire team is rallying behind him. Everyone who stayed for a reason. I truly did get that feeling, and you still get that feeling in the building right now, because there were a lot of transfers. There was a lot of turnover, even on this coaching staff. On the other side, it's all of the setbacks that we talked about there at the beginning. And he understands that. I mean, he's addressed that pretty transparently since that portion of the offseason, saying, you know, talking about the negative recruiting, talking about, look, we got to get everybody in this organization pulling in the right way. Then you flash forward to last month, where the athletic director, Alan Green, steps away from his post, which was not a surprising move at all, because ever since the new president came in, there was not really talks about re-upping his contract, which was going to expire in January. So now you got a situation where Harsin basically has to win 7 or 8 games. It's got to be either, in my opinion, this is obviously not set in stone, but it's either got to be a good 7, good wins, good finish, good recruiting, or 8 wins in order to stick around. And his president that hired him and the AD that hired him are no longer here. So it's about as rocky as they come. And if we're circling back to this game in particular, every game like this is massive for Auburn. You know, you want to see Brian Harsin, if you're the team right now, you want to see him having success and having an opportunity to continue to be the coach. And you know, there are some people maybe within the program, but within the university, who you know, want to make a change at the end of the season regardless. And so maybe they, you know, would rather see Auburn lose this game. I don't know. It's definitely a really sticky situation, but there's really no way to downplay how important it is now that Auburn gets to their actual Power 5 portion of their schedule and gets an opportunity to play a big game like this, because they need a good game, because the last game they played against San Jose State, it was a typical Auburn, you know, against a non-Power 5 team, they've done it year over year. They did against Georgia State last season, sort of playing down to their competition, maybe looking ahead to this week's game against Penn State. And so, like we talked about at the beginning, they've still got a lot to prove. They've got a lot to prove on the field. You know, I think if you're looking at these teams objectively, I think Penn State has proven a little bit more, at least maybe with this season. And if you go back, you know, to last year, you know, the kind of coach that James Franklin is, just kind of over time, I think they may be coming here with a little bit more complete of a team, but then Auburn's got that home crowd advantage. So in my opinion, that makes for what should be an awesome game on Saturday.
Only 15 games into his career at Auburn, but a lot of noise, 8-7 over that span. And it was such a turbulent offseason that you probably couldn't have asked for more of a soft landing than getting Mercer and San Jose State back-to-back before Penn State comes to town. And oh, by the way, the first five games of this regular season schedule for the Tigers are on home turf, which is nice for you and your travel itinerary. But Nathan, when we look at this matchup, and we before we look at this matchup, I should say, you already spotlighted last week and it being kind of a disheartening, disappointing performance. What was the most disappointing aspect of Auburn versus San Jose State? A game they trailed at halftime and a game they won by 8 as a 24-point favorite.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, yeah, you said 24-point favorite. They only scored 24 points in the game. And it's funny. They had such a nice offensive turnaround in the second half. Granted, 17 points in the second half against a Mountain West team is nothing to, you know, throw a bunch of balloons over. But the first quarter was the biggest surprise. I mean, across Auburn's first four drives, they technically netted 31 yards of offense. But if you look at penalty yardage, so if you actually look at, you know, how they progressed on the field and how they moved back, 0 yards across their first four drives. And then two turnovers, four penalties in the first quarter, three on the first drive, and only one first down in the first quarter. And those two turnovers, I mean, you had obviously TJ Finley. You don't want your starting quarterback to have three interceptions through his first two games, let alone against Mercer's defense and San Jose State's defense. And then Robbie Ashford, who we'll talk about the quarterback situation later, but you know, they kind of run a 2QB system. He's more your change of pace guy, and they wanted to see him open up his arm a little bit more in this game. That was from what I was told. You know, he threw only seven passes in the opener, and so the plan was maybe to get him closer to double digits there in the second game. That plan was completely shot when he, you know, threw a guy, you know, 7 yards to the right. It was one of the most egregious interceptions. And Brian Harsin agreed. He was like, yeah, that was just the wrong play. It was not a good throw. One of the most egregious interceptions I've ever seen by an SEC quarterback. So similar to the first game, and that's another one of my concerns, I think, for the Penn State matchup is similar to the first game when they had a lightning delay, nearly an hour and 40 minutes. And then, you know, when you come back out from that, things just aren't the same. The field's different. You're in a different phase of the game. The game plan is different. Similar to that game, because of their first quarter offensive struggles against San Jose State, their game plan was different in game two as well. So I'm not sure they've been able to go out and execute exactly what they wanted to in these first few games. They've had some defensive struggles relatively. I'm not as concerned about that as other people are. Obviously, when you look at the success of short passing game against them these first couple weeks, sort of the flashbacks of Sean Clifford start coming up for Auburn fans when he went 28 of 32 last season. And so it's not a good time for that problem to be poking itself back up. But I think, you know, if you spend too much time talking about the defense, you're probably not doing enough justice to what has been a shaky passing game so far, because Auburn's got a lot of dudes on defense, and I think they'll be able to figure it out, and I think they'll be up to play in this game.
Bo Nix was the quarterback here at Happy Valley last September. He's moved on to Oregon, where, of course, he was naturally introduced to Georgia once more in his first game there. It's been a transfer portal approach for Auburn at the quarterback position. They got a mix of guys who started their college careers elsewhere. TJ Finley threw 27 passes on Saturday. You mentioned Ashford, them wanting to get him more involved. Well, he finished 1 of 3 with 1 pick and 1 yard. Where is that quarterback spot through 8 quarters of this season? What's the trust, in your opinion, between the coaching staff and the QB? And how do they take the next step, if there is one to be made?
Yeah, it's absolutely TJ Finley at this moment. You know, we thought after that first game, which goes to show you never really take much, you know, weight into one individual game, especially a game against an FCS opponent. But boy, did Robbie Ashford look nice in that game. You know, over 100 yards, or excuse me, not 100 yards. I think he had like 80 or 90 yards rushing, a couple long runs. He went 4 of 7 passing, had a couple deep shots that looked really good. And overall, I mean, Finley had 2 picks in that game, and the passing attack just really wasn't very explosive. And then you had a guy like Ashford come in and really just open things up. The yards per play comparison versus when one guy was taking a snap, even if he wasn't throwing the ball, even if he didn't end up with the ball in his hands, it was pretty stark, the difference between the two of them. And then the rubber hits the road in the next game, and things kind of get a little dicey, and you see what happens. It's completely TJ Finley's show. on offense. Like I mentioned, after that interception, so he started against San Jose State. Finley started 1 for 5 with an interception early in that game. He closed out 12 of 15 with 10.5 yards per attempt on those final 15 throws of the game, and he had a rushing touchdown, and he had 2 fourth-down conversions with his arm, both of which were on broken plays where he kind of just had to scramble out and make it happen. He did so on both plays. So that's where I kind of – and I talked about it this week, and some people on our board didn't necessarily want to hear it because he's not been overly impressive at this point. But, you know, that sort of exemplified his growth from last season. You know, even he talked about when he won the starting quarterback job that he wasn't prepared to take over for Bo Nix last year mentally, physically. You know, he straight up said, you know, you're supposed to prepare as a starter, and I wasn't necessarily doing that. To now a situation where even at, you know, he's had these interceptions early in the season. And after that mistake against San Jose State, he came back strong. You know, he's pretty calm and composed in difficult situations kind of later in that game. All of that is to say, considering we've been talking about struggles against an FCS team and San Jose State through these first couple games, there's not a lot of confidence in that passing game right now. They absolutely have to set up the running game with Tank Bigsby and Jarquez Hunter, who are two fantastic running backs, one of the better duos in the SEC, in order for them to take the next step, more explosiveness and really just more production overall at receiver. They've got Javarius Johnson. He is also a guy you're going to see maybe a little bit on punt returns. He's one of the more explosive receivers in the SEC. Actually leads the SEC in yards per catch right now, though he's only been targeted 8 times the first couple games. And then a fifth-year senior named Shedrick Jackson. I remember he made a couple plays in State College last year. Really not an explosive guy, but between the tackles, between the hashes, he'll pick you up some consistent first downs, a good route runner, a good blocker. Other than that, who knows? I mean, they have a rotation. Tarvarish Dawson is a guy, Malcolm Johnson Jr. You'll see a little bit of Landon King, who's a converted tight end. But in terms of production, in terms of what they've shown on the field, it's been little to nothing, except for those top two guys. And so you have to give Finley a better opportunity to feel confident pushing the ball to different receivers. And then the explosiveness, I mean, that's something Auburn has been lacking in the passing game for the past 3 or 4 years, you know, save for a guy like Anthony Schwartz a couple years ago. And then this year, you know, save for Javarius Johnson, you can't just have that one guy who you're going to be pushing the ball to downfield every single play. The offensive line has done a pretty good job these first couple games. But then again, like we've talked about, this is such a litmus test because PJ Mustafer and that Penn State defensive line is completely different than what you've seen in these first couple games against Mercer and San Jose State. So we'll learn a lot about this Auburn team, I think, this weekend, particularly like you were talking about, particularly in that passing game, because that is probably their biggest concern at the moment.
Auburn's best approach last time these two teams met was handing the ball off to Tank Bigsby. There's no doubt about it. They did a nice job in that regard. It took quite a number of carries for him to get to 100 yards. I think he was around 23, 24 in that game, a couple touchdowns. Hunter was the guy, I think, that popped up over the course of that matchup and had Penn State fans a little worried. Those two guys are back. I think there's been a lot of talk this week here from Penn State's perspective that this defense is going to face its first legitimate ground game threat and kind of that battering ram nature, and we want to see how they respond. You said it's a litmus test. I'm going to ask you ahead of that test, what's your gut tell you about the ability for Penn State's Auburn's offensive front and Auburn's ground game to really set a foundation against the Nittany Lions?
I think they can do so. Just looking at what Penn State, you know, through these first couple games, they are strong in terms of the defensive front. Like I said about talent level, it's a group that Auburn hasn't seen anybody like it since last season. I mean, Penn State, talking to Auburn players this week, it's funny, they said on film, it's like they're an SEC play already, talking about not only the kind of talent Penn State has, but really the way they play, you know, their defensive formations in terms of the front seven, the way they play man-to-man on the outside, and then on the flip side, going over to the offense, talking about a guy like Sean Clifford, you know, how big and strong their offensive line is. And so some of the veteran guys were like, look, we're used to this. It's like we're in conference play already. In terms of a confidence level, it'd be pretty high for me just because you look at these kinds of games in the past for Auburn at home. Rarely do they struggle to set up the ground game unless they're playing someone like Georgia, where, of course, they're going to average, you know, 1.3 yards per carry. The question has been, and like you mentioned, Bo Nix has been the quarterback. The question has been, how much can you complement it with a passing game? Again, I hate to go back to that on a question about the running game, but Tank Bigsby is a proven commodity. When Jarquez Hunter does his thing, like Penn State fans saw last year, they saw him in one of his better games of the season. I mean, he had that big hurdle on the last drive as Auburn was going down trying to trying to tie the game. He had a little bit of a knee procedure, minor knee procedure in the offseason, but he looks good as ever. He had four touchdowns on his first 11 carries of the season. Again, it was against, you know, minor opponents, but it's still a pretty good clip for him. That's a really good looking 1-2 punch. Their run blocking has been very efficient in these first couple games. So all that leads me to say, yeah, Tank Bigsby does good sometimes, even against a loaded box. Sometimes there's just not much you can do against him, but they've got to turn that into play action opportunities. They've got to turn that into TJ Finley becoming more comfortable pushing the ball downfield, because he's been not in the way that Bo Nix used to scramble out and escape pressure. That's not the type of quarterback that he's been, but he has maybe gone through too many reads, and they haven't really faced a great pass rush yet. And there's been one guy draped over him, but it's a 5'11 linebacker on the FCS level. Finley's 6'7". He can kind of just brush the guy off. Not going to be the same way against Penn State. He's going to have to go to, you know, first, second, third read and get the ball out or escape the pocket. And the running game absolutely has to give him an opportunity. So I think the long-winded way of saying that is I think they will have the opportunity to do that. I think the running game will set that up. I have a hard time believing Penn State is just going to completely bottle up these two running backs. They look like they can be pretty successful in this game, but the question to me is whether they can execute on it, whether they can, you know, make good on that sort of baseline for their offense. And in terms of the confidence level for that on the other hand is not very high for me at the moment.
Last time we saw Sean Clifford go against this Auburn defense, he had the most efficient passing performance of his college career. I think he completed nearly 90% of those passes. It was a strong evening for him in the whiteout crowd. Now he's going on the road. He's a guy who's played 35 college starts to this point. I don't think a lot of people are worried about him being shaky in any kind of road environment. But the question for Auburn has to be, how do you get him off of that rhythm? And Sean Clifford's been a guy in his career who's been a bit streaky. When it goes bad, it can stay bad for a few possessions. When you talk to those Auburn defenders and the coaching staff, what is their biggest priority against a six-year senior quarterback this week?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the praise through the roof, and I think that's something that shows the impasse between fans and players and coaches. And we talked about it last year on this show, but sort of the parallels between a guy like Sean Clifford and a guy like Bo Nix, someone who is, you know, capable of giving you so much in the passing game, and then we didn't even know, but we saw it on Saturday, one of those games where he just flashed and was a fantastic player, and absolutely the reason that offense was humming along in that game. And then you have some head scratchers. And I, you know, the Purdue game, I thought, you know, that was such an entertaining way to open the season watching that game. And man, quintessential Sean Clifford. It was so good. I mean, you have the big mistake in the fourth quarter and then you yourself make up for it and lead the long touchdown drive. You know, he's such a polarizing quarterback. And the fact that he's a 6-year senior, he's such an awesome college quarterback to follow. He just gives you so much entertainment one way or another. But yeah, they absolutely cannot let him do that short passing game again. And, you know, I know they don't have a guy like a Jahan Dotson again, but I know Mitchell Tinsley's look pretty nice. I know they've got, you know, Parker Washington, they've got you know, some other good receivers there. They just cannot allow him to be so efficient throwing the ball, and they've got to get him into third down and long situations. I think that's the biggest key, because, you know, talking to some people on that joint thread that you mentioned, some Auburn folks talking about the strength of Auburn's defensive front. And some Penn State fans are asking, well, you know, didn't they have trouble getting after it with just four last season? And the answer to that is yes, is number one. Number two, they improved over the course of last season, that pass rush did. And number three, they returned pretty much everybody in that pass rush, and they've got two of the better pass rushers in the SEC right now, and Derek Hall and Eku Liota. So you have to give those guys an opportunity to make life hard on Sean Clifford. I think if they can force him into a turnover or two, that's going to be massive for this game, because like you mentioned, it's, you know, he's been a little shaky in the past when things don't go his way. At the same time, I am interested to see, you know, if he's not up to snuff or gets some sort of injury. I know the backup isn't too shabby either, and some Penn State fans really want to see him in this game and just over the course of the season down the stretch. But yeah, the biggest thing for Clifford is if you're this Auburn defense, you've already had trouble defending short passes, defending the slants. Owen Papo, the linebacker who actually got hurt in this game last season, said that is the number one thing they're focusing on this week, is stopping those short passes, because they changed defensive coordinators, but man, it looks like the same issues in terms of that quick passing game from both Mercer and San Jose State. So I mean, I hate to harp on it over and over again, but I mean, that that absolutely, when you complete 87.5% of your passes, that absolutely killed Auburn last year. It gave them no chance to be able to get that offense off the field. So that has to be their biggest focus this week.
Something that Sean Clifford did not have last year was a ground game that could provide explosive plays, a ground game that could provide consistent balance, and that was all season long. We got an early glimpse at that against Auburn, but it was the harbinger of things to come in a lot of ways that September. Now this September, we're learning a little bit different of a scenario because Nick Singleton has arrived, and in more ways than one. Last week against Beaver in Beaver Stadium, three carries of 40-plus yards. Auburn's the first coaching staff to handle some film that involves number 10 flashing in a significant way and looking like a guy who can be a star for Penn State. What has the feedback been when his name has come up? Because he is a new part of this equation. We've talked about some familiar faces in this matchup. To me, he could be that X factor.
Yeah, I mean, he's a dude. I can't say that his name necessarily has come up specifically from anybody but Brian Harsin, who when he was running through the players to watch, definitely mentioned him. But like you said, it gives this game a different element that it didn't have last season. And like you said, it was a sign of things to come because I know Penn State really struggled, you know, bottom 10, bottom 15 in the country running the football last season, so to bring in a five-star guy like him who gives you that change of pace. I mean, when we just spent that whole time talking about how much they need to affect Sean Clifford, they couldn't really do so last year, and they didn't have that change of pace guy. So that, if you're Penn State, I think you're hoping that makes life a little bit easier. Auburn's run defense has been pretty stout these first couple games, and if I had to imagine, it will be pretty good against Penn State. Some of their interior guys, I think Colby Wooden, the defensive tackle, he's probably the best player on the entire team. You get Owen Papo back from injury. He's a great tackler there at linebacker. They actually have a guy, Cam Riley, who's got almost 20 tackles through two games, and it's his first time starting in his career. Auburn's always known to have sure tacklers at defensive back. It's been that way past three or four seasons. Evident last year, I don't think they had a ton of explosive plays after they caught the ball. I mean, Clifford can complete it, but they were actually able to bring him down pretty well. And so all that leads me to believe that Auburn will have a pretty good game plan for Singleton and the rest of this rushing attack for Penn State. And so I think it goes back to what we talked about with TJ Finley. I mean, you have to look at who's going to be able to make the plays with their arm in this game. I think, you know, the better quarterback is going to win this game. And again, another reason why that kind of leans Penn State here, because you've got a guy like Clifford with everything that he's gone through in his career and all the ups and downs. He's still done it in these kinds of spots way more than a guy like TJ Finley has, where really the only time he's done something like this was when he beat Georgia State last season when he came in for Bo Nix after he got benched. And so, I mean, I would expect overall, maybe if you're comparing the two sides, Auburn to have a little bit better of a day on the ground than Penn State, although Singleton is fantastic. You could absolutely see him pop in this game, but they know everything about Sean Clifford that we've been talking about. They want to make sure that they can make him beat them and not have a, you know, not have a 1-2 punch, a ground game set up into play action. They don't want that going for them. They feel confident in their ability to play well against Clifford, and obviously they're upset with what happened last year, and they want to have a bounce back performance in that regard. And so, you know, I think they're a pretty stout run defense, but again, it goes back to what we talked about over and over again. This is a litmus test. We'll see. They should be a good run defense. They haven't played anybody yet, and you're only going off of what you saw last season. So
let's finish off with two topics here, the first of which is special teams play. I know the place kicker's back. He's hit some 40-plus yard field goals, had a couple against Penn State, did Carlson last year. Tell us about the scope of special teams, and then if you can finish this off, it's Wednesday afternoon. We're midway through this game week. You don't have to give us a score prediction if you're not ready, and you got to give that to your own site. But can you tell us kind of where you're at on this matchup 3 days out?
Yeah, special teams has been pretty nice for Auburn here in the early season. It was certainly not a down spot for them during that losing record last year. It starts with a guy named Oscar Chapman, who was second team All-SEC in the preseason at punter. He was the fifth highest graded punter, according to PFF, in all of college football last season. You look at some of his efficiency metrics, especially when they cross midfield. You know, some teams kind of get into no man's land when you're between that, you know, 45 to 35 yard line. And even if it's a difficult fourth down, you're saying, I mean, we're just going to punt it right into the end zone, so why not? Oscar Chapman's kind of nice. He gives you that ability to punt the ball. I mean, I think they punted it from San Jose State's 44 yard line and it was down to the two. So, I mean, he does stuff like that pretty consistently. And heck, we've seen that be a factor in big games across the country over the years for certain. And so I think he's probably your biggest X factor there. He's absolutely a guy that you look throughout the season for Auburn in these kinds of big games, and they get into SEC play. He's a guy you could pencil in as an X factor every single game, because, I mean, the biggest one was the Iron Bowl last season, when obviously they had a defensive masterclass against Alabama until Bryce Young does what he does, and like he pretty much was the same as the Texas game. But I mean, I think he had 3 punts inside the 10 that game and 5 inside the 20. So he absolutely gives you a chance to set your defense up for some success. Yeah, Anders Carlson is back from that knee procedure. He tore his ACL in week 11 last year, and now he's back. So that was a pretty swift recovery for him. He's kind of middle of the pack in terms of SEC kicking. He carries a lot of weight because of his last name. Obviously, his older brother is the SEC's all-time leading scorer. But he didn't have too great of a year last year, and so you know, you trust him if you want him to kick the ball in a clutch situation, because he is so experienced. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see if that knee affects him at all. And then a guy named Keontae Scott is their new punt returner. I mentioned Javarius Johnson earlier. I think Scott probably has him overtaken for the most part. He's a JUCO addition at defensive back. Good looking player. He's had a couple nice ones. He's one of those punt returners who really just kind of goes for it. I mean, there'll be guys right in his face and he'll attack the ball, try to make one move and get 10 yards upfield. And again, it's been Mercer and San Jose State, but he's had pretty decent success doing that. So special teams is an area where maybe Auburn can try to get some extra yardage in this game, because in all three phases of it, I think they are kick returns as well. Jarquez Hunter and Nehemiah Pritchard are pretty good returners. So I think maybe they can try to get some advantages in that regard. Yeah, and then in terms of the game, I mean, if you couldn't already tell over the course of the podcast, I mean, I definitely think there are more advantages for Penn State in this game. You like Auburn being at home, certainly, and Jordan-Hare is a place where, you know, Penn State fans, I'm sure, have watched it over the years in SEC play, but it's just cursed for other teams. Sometimes, I mean, obviously sometimes, you know, somebody will come in and just dome you, of course, if you're a bad team, and Mississippi State came back from 4 touchdowns down in the second half in Jordan-Hare last year. So it's, you know, it's not always this way, but, if things get tight in the fourth quarter, which I would imagine, and I would hope, because I hope it's a great game. I would think they will in this game. I don't really see it being a blowout any way or another. Sometimes that crowd and sometimes that stadium has a way of just kind of willing Auburn to victory. All of that said, I haven't landed on a score prediction. I think I'm still going Penn State. I think I picked Penn State in this game last season. It would not surprise me at all if Auburn won this game. I'm sure y'all are kind of in the same spot where it's, you know, Auburn has had some issues here in the early season, but get a couple turnovers off of a guy like Clifford, get some momentum, get a couple first half touchdowns in front of that home crowd, and wouldn't be surprising at all for them to win this game. But I just see Penn State right now as not only being the more complete team on both sides of the ball, but I trust James Franck a little bit more in this game than I do Brian Harsin. And it all goes back to the quarterback play. I definitely trust Sean Clifford. I know he's, you know, again, a polarizing figure there for Penn State football, but I definitely trust him more than a guy like TJ Finley in this game. And so on the flip side, if Finley wins it, if Finley's good with his arm, you know, completes a decent percentage, doesn't have turnovers, heck, that makes you very confident moving into SEC play. But, you know, at this current juncture, I'm not sure if I'll change it over the course of the week. And again, haven't necessarily landed on a score prediction, but I would probably think Penn State is able to come in here and get the win.
Yeah, an important tune-up for both sides as they get ready for conference play approaching. And we appreciate your perspective, like we got it last September. Really good stuff, Nathan, from you. Hope you get Daniel's perspective on your podcast, and you and your listeners enjoy that. Thanks a lot. We'll find out Saturday how it all shakes out, and we'll look for your coverage.
For sure. Do the same with y'all. Appreciate y'all.
We'll be right back on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A whole lot on Auburn there from Nathan. Thanks again to him. Let's shift and get back to Penn State now. We've got a lot to discuss with the Nittany Lions for the remainder of the show leading up to our final picks for the game. Let's do that with Mark Brennan, Daniel Gallen, my colleagues at Lions247.com. Great coverage throughout the week, fellas. Let's get into it on our Thursday episode once more. And before we talk about this game, there was a roster update this week, and I just wanted to kind of go through that briefly because we get these roster updates. We don't know when they're going to pop up, and all of a sudden you'll see some adjustments in terms of weight, in terms of where guys are in their physical development. So we were able to glean a little bit from that through checking things out. Guys, you saw the list I put together. You've got Katron Allen down 24 pounds. You've got Drew Aller up 13 pounds. You got Malik McNeil at 6'7", down about 20 pounds. Drew Shelton on the other side of that, an offensive tackle, he's up close to 20 pounds. I'm curious what stood up to you. We've got the full list over at Lions247.com, but it was one of our rare kind of examinations of how freshmen are developing with a little bit of info from Penn State.
Yeah, I thought the Drew Shelton information was pretty interesting. I mean, there's a guy we've heard nothing but good things about. Looks like he's repping with the second team. And when you look at some of the issues that they're having at right tackle, now obviously he's repping at left tackle now, but you just wonder if he's maybe more equipped to play sooner than maybe we had anticipated. He was down, I think, in the 260s for his high school basketball season, if not even a little less than that. So for him to come in and put on that weight, and he wasn't a guy who was an early enrollee. He came in the summer. So, ideally, you don't want to have to rely on a true freshman at tackle. But given some of the issues they've had at that position, it's good to know that physically he looks like where he's close to where he needs to be. And all the intel that we're getting is that he's just really, really advanced when it comes to the technical aspects of playing. So I think that was a really good thing for Penn State.
I'd go with Katron Allen. Obviously, when he came in with Nick Singleton, it was kind of billed at a little bit like thunder and lightning, with Nick Singleton as the lightning, Katron Allen, a.k.a. Fat Man, as the thunder out of IMG Academy. I think through two games, Nick Singleton has shown that he can be both thunder and lightning himself. Just based on how he plays. But I think that when you saw them on the field together during preseason camp, it was like you could tell that Nick Singleton was bigger than Katron Allen. You could tell that Katron Allen was a little bit smaller than we thought he was. And I think that the 201 kind of reflects how he's looked on the field through these first two games, with kind of how smooth he is. I've been really impressed with how he seems patient and kind of glides almost when he's looking to find the hole to hit. So I think that's the one that stood out to me, mostly based on kind of expectations versus the reality, how this was kind of presented, how the scouting was, how we thought this was going to be versus how it is now.
And I should have clarified this at the top. Those weight differentials I'm talking about were the announced weights that Penn State put out there publicly on signing day when these guys put pen to paper versus where they are at this current roster update. So 24 pounds from last December for Katron Allen. We don't necessarily know when that weight loss kind of started, but that's notable. Nick Singleton now 18 pounds heavier than Katron Allen, according to Penn State's roster. And you talk about the speed that Katron Allen brings at almost 220 pounds. By the way, Drew Aller, no longer 240 plus, 238, but he was 225 on signing day. And there's no other quarterback on this roster that I believe reaches 220 pounds. So he stands out. And then three wide receivers, Anthony Ivey, Tyler Johnson, and Omari Evans, all 10-plus pound gains since they were announced on signing day. One other note here, non-freshman, but Tyrese Mills, who came to campus this summer out of Lackawanna College. He played safety at Lackawanna. He's transitioned to linebacker. I think you like to see this. was 195 when they announced him, now at 205 as he gets into a new position there. And fellas, let's jump into it a little bit now as we get ready for the Auburn game. We got some of those freshman notes out of the way. Coming off the practice field, Daniel, we got some clarity on certain guys, but more of the same, I feel like, with Theo Johnson. That word hopeful was applied to his status last week leading up to the matchup against Ohio. He was not in uniform. He did travel to Purdue. I'd expect he'll travel this weekend. Whether or not we see him come out of the tunnel in full uniform a half hour before this game remains to be seen.
It's the second straight week that James Franklin said that he's hopeful that Theo Johnson will be able to come back. Obviously, the fact that he traveled to Purdue made it seem like he was, you know, I guess, close to playing. But the big difference between last week and this week, even though James Franklin said pretty much the same thing, is that Theo Johnson was on the practice field this week. He was, you know, going through drills during the portion that we were able to be there for. So we got eyes on him. Can't really miss him at 6'6", 260 pounds. But that's big for the tight end room, given how, you know, I mean, Brenton Strange, Tyler Warren, Khalil Dinkins didn't play on offense, I don't think, in that Purdue game. So if they want to do the things that they want to do with that 13 personnel with three tight ends, they need Theo Johnson back. And I think that if he's available, it just adds something different to the offense right now.
There was an absence at practice that stood out to a lot of people. Katron Allen, who we just discussed, was not seen with the running back unit. James Franklin was asked directly during his post-practice media session about that. Confirmed Katron Allen was not on the field for practice, but also said he will be available against Auburn. So an important clarifying aspect of Katron Allen's absence before we got off the field, which was highly appreciated from James Franklin. More of the same, though, when it comes to a couple defensive linemen. Smith Vilbert, who had those three sacks, all of his career sacks in the Outback Bowl back on New Year's Day, still wearing a scout team uniform. And then Keziah Holmes, who was the starter at defensive tackle for Penn State for the second half of last season, also in a scout team uniform. I'm sorry, Keziah Izzard. I was wondering why Danny was laughing. One Keziah on the team left.
I did it earlier. I did it in an earlier podcast. We're all going to get it sooner or later.
Yeah, I'm up next.
So this is a matchup. We've talked about it, and Daniel, we'll discuss this a bit with you later on, because Penn State's defenders have been saying they're ready to take some punches and dish some back in this matchup. It's a different kind of offense they're going to encounter. Physical up front, they're going to want to run the ball right down the middle at you, and they're going to want to do that repeatedly. So, of course, the lack of bodies is a concern, and a guy like Keziah Izzard and then Smith Vilbert, who have Big Ten experience and have experience against Power 5 opponents. But let's face it, so far as we understand, it's a pretty healthy unit. We got some roster risers in the mix. And I said it last week, every game these guys miss, and for whatever reason they're missing in it, I don't want to speculate it, but they're putting themselves in a bit of peril for whenever they do get back, because other guys are showing what they can accomplish on the field.
Well, we're going to see this week. I mean, this is going to be more of a power rushing team than Penn State's seen. So Izzard's a guy who I thought played okay for them against Arkansas, which was not afraid to run the ball, obviously. So let's see how they're able to do. Now, we don't know if he's going or if he's not going, but the fact that he was on the scout team kind of leads you to believe that maybe he's not quite in the mix. The other guy that we didn't mention, and I was remiss in not doing that from the freshman weights, though, was Zane Durant. He was up there, what, 276, was it, Tyler? I mean, that's
– I think he was announced at about 260. 260 was the signing day weight. He's now at 276.
And he I got to tell you, when you see him, he does not look 276. That has to be just like thick, you know, muscle. I don't know what he's made of, but it's, you know, he's a guy who I think is going to have an opportunity to help them. He's not like a one technique tackle. No, he's not a big 300 plus pounder. But for his size, he's really tough and able to do some things with his quickness and just his strength. So maybe that helps offset not having a guy like Izzard.
Fortunately for Penn State at this point, it's not a long injury report to go through, at least of what we're aware of, and guys exiting games and guys being questionable for the next one. That will change. But right now in week three, they're in a pretty good spot health-wise heading down to SEC territory. And we'll talk first about what we project as the strengths for Penn State in this matchup. They are a three-point favorite. This is the second consecutive year Penn State will face Auburn. These are the only two regular season matchups in the series history between these two squads. They played and split in a couple bowls in the past. Mark, you were at both of those. This time around, though, what do you think? As you kind of measure up Penn State against an SEC opponent, this doesn't happen often, Mark. You were on the road trip in 2010 last time they did this against Alabama. How do you feel about the Nittany Lions' opportunity and what maybe they could accomplish from a national perception standpoint, aside from the win-loss equation here?
Yeah, well, in a lot of these matchups over the years with Penn State versus SEC teams, you've always kind of looked at it like, you know, Penn State was usually more of the grinded out team, and the opponent was usually more you looked at as a more athletic overall type team. And I think that's kind of been flipped on its head. From my perspective, Penn State's strength going into this one defensively is obviously its secondary. Now, how is that going to work against a power rushing team? That's going to be real interesting to see, because you're looking at an Auburn team that completes, 50% of its passes, something like that overall, one touchdown pass, I think four interceptions. And they're going to have to be able to run the ball, but can you be one-dimensional against this Penn State defense? So I think that's going to be, you know, the athleticism of the Penn State defense, I think, is going to give Auburn trouble. But conversely, I think Auburn, it's going to have to rely on its power running game and blow Penn State out of there. And I just don't know that that's going to be able to happen. So I think overall defensively, the athleticism is really the key. And I think on the other side of the ball, just the number of skill players that Penn State is going to be able to throw at Auburn. You know, the first two games that Auburn played, they did not see any athletes of this caliber that they're going to see from the key positions. But what is the question mark for Penn State in every single game? The offensive line. So how's that unit going to do against a stout defensive line?
Daniel, I'll pose the same question to you, and then I'm going to bring in something that Nathan said here. The benefit of the doubt is not there in place for Auburn's quarterbacks right now. As much as some Penn State fans don't feel it is, there's certainly more benefit of the doubt for Sean Clifford. How do you think those guys going against their opposing defenses, who do you think has the edge there?
Yeah, that tees it up perfectly for me. I think that Penn State's strength in this game is a combination, you know, involves the quarterback position. Like Mark said, I think that secondary matches up really, really well with Auburn's wide receivers. Auburn doesn't really have a real game breaker, a real kind of, you know, number one, I don't think, on their roster. And I think that when you look at the matchup for the quarterbacks, I mean, as much as Penn State fans don't necessarily feel comfortable trusting Sean Clifford, I think you have to trust Sean Clifford more than TJ Finley and Robbie Ashford in this game. I think that if you were to go position by position and break down who is the edge, Penn State definitely has the edge at quarterback, even though Sean Clifford has been a little up and down, had the interception against Purdue. So I think that that's a strength for Penn State that might be a little bit more under the radar. You know, it feels kind of weird to say that Sean Clifford can be under the radar in any way, but I think that you know what he is at this point, and you know kind of what the lows are, but that baseline, I think, is can win you a game in SEC country, especially when the quarterbacks on the other side, like if Penn State can take away the run and force TJ Finley to try to beat them with his arm, I think Penn State's in great shape.
I think they could absolutely feast on this passing game of Auburn's if they have to go that direction to the Tigers. And that brings you out to, can you get off to that hot start offensively and play that complimentary football? Because I think there is a real case to be made where if Penn State can get some kind of two-score advantage early in this game, put some pressure on Auburn and show that they can stop or at least effectively corral the Tigers' rushing attack, that's going to put Auburn in a really precarious situation that I don't think they're comfortable with, much less against one of the secondaries that is being lauded across college football for its potential and for its performances so far. Looking at Sean Clifford, guys, let's not forget, he's made a couple starts on the road at Ohio State. You know, he started in pretty much every Big Ten environment you can imagine. He's played in some big-time bowl matchups, and this will be his first taste on the road at SEC, but I talked about this earlier in the week. I know there's a lot of fervor for the freshman quarterback right now, but this is just such an advantageous situation to have this quarterback with 35 career starts. And I think to this point, because of the flashes that Aller has shown this year and because people kind of feel like they have Sean Clifford figured out, they may be overlooking some facts. And those are, he has 7 touchdowns and 1 turnover through essentially 6 quarters of play thus far. And he's led 3 touchdown drives, including a game winner, the final, or I should say 4 touchdown drives, including a game winner in 2-minute situations at the end of halves. So to me, Sean Clifford, I have a lot of confidence in him going this game. I know at the national conversation, people are kind of wondering if both quarterback situation, who's going to kind of be teetering on the brink of crapping the bed in this situation. I have a hard time seeing that happen to Sean Clifford. He may make some mistakes, but I don't see him being out of his element regardless of what Jordan-Hare Stadium throws his way. And I think that's very important in this matchup because I think Auburn's quarterbacks playing at home even – this moment just might be too big for any of them, whoever they throw out there.
Well, that's why I thought it was important last week. Remember when we were talking going into the Ohio game, a lot of people were like, Penn State should just do whatever it can do to establish the rushing game. And I'm like, no. I think they have to show balance. And they came out and they did that. They did a really good job. They put a lot of things on tape that Auburn's going to have to worry about. And it's going to be sort of a pick your poison proposition. But guys, I mean, to me, it comes back. We keep saying it over and over and over, but it's true. It's the skill position players are fine. Sean Clifford's fine. But if he doesn't have time to throw the ball, there's going to be an issue. So this is a really important game for that offensive line to step up. It was up and down against Purdue. The right side really struggled. It was up and down against Ohio, giving up 5 sacks. I know that wasn't all on the first team, but you know that really shouldn't be happening against that level of competition. So as I look at this, I forget about the quarterback. I forget about the skill players. They're all going to be just fine. I think it's going to come down to what that offensive line is able to do against a good defensive front for Auburn.
We did hear from James Franklin after practice Wednesday. Expect to see plenty of Hunter Norzad involved again at both guard positions, potentially at center, potentially. He was at all three of those spots last week. You may not see him in the starting lineup, but he's going to be a factor. Same goes for Bryce Effner, who was splitting time on the right side at tackle with Caden Wallace. They're going to factor into this offensive line plan. And guys, the skill positions, there's so many emerging names, whether it's Omari Evans, a new guy, and Mitchell Tinsley that everyone's starting to really feel comfortable with as a top target for this team. But to me, Nick Singleton changes everything. What he did and what he put on film, I don't care who they played last week. Look, Auburn played San Jose State, and they looked like crap for the most part. Nick Singleton played Ohio, and he looked like a five-star getting his feet wet in college football. And so, to me, the ability to go long distance, we've heard it from players and coaches over the course of this week. You got to imagine being able to do that for the first time since the Cotton Bowl in 2019. It just changes the way a team's going to be able to approach you. And in my opinion, it's going to give Mike Yurcich an opportunity to scheme things differently than he's ever been able to thus far in his Penn State career. Because as much as they maybe try to establish the run in certain situations, it was unsuccessful. And ultimately, it felt like they had to break free from what they wanted to do from a game plan perspective repeatedly over the course of last year because they could not establish things on the ground. We got to see it from Nick again. But just the fact that they go into this game and that's kind of a feather in their cap, something they can throw your way, I think that's a big, big adjustment.
It definitely makes me feel better about this offense going in to Auburn. I think that we've kind of established that Nick Singleton is the type of running back who can make up for some deficiencies. I don't know if he'll be able to make it to the edge as easily against Derek Hall or Colby Wooden as he did against Ohio. But I think that the fact that that's a threat, I think that that helps Sean Clifford out. I think that some of the defensive guys talked about it, that it's just kind of a boost to them to know that on the offensive side of the ball, that there's a running back that can score, you know, pretty much at will from any part of the field if things break right. So I think that you do have to be concerned about the offensive line. I had that written down under my concerns. You know, how are those tackles going to hold up against those edge rushers? I think that this could be a big showcase game for Olu Fashanu, who we talked to earlier this week. I want to see what they can do for Nick Singleton. How can they make it easier for Nick Singleton? What can they do to open things up for him so that we don't end up in a situation like we saw last year where the running backs would try to have to do everything themselves? And, you know, Nick Singleton can do that sometimes, but I don't necessarily think that's a recipe for leaving Auburn with a win Saturday.
And acknowledging the fact that it was Ohio, some of those runs, some of the highlights from Saturday, maybe they're 10-yard gains, but I don't think Nick Singleton is outracing the Auburn defense. Owen Papo's out there, really rangy linebacker. You mentioned it, though, the defensive front, they've got some big fellas in the middle, but on the perimeter – Derek Hall, 9 sacks last year. He's got 3 quarterback hurries for the first stages of the season. He's kind of that name you circle. Smith Vilbert was wearing his jersey. So they've got a pretty solid athlete playing the role of Derek Hall, but there's only so much you can do to account for him. I'm with you. Big moment for Olufashinu. He's developing a foundation to be a really, really high-level tackle in the Big Ten Conference. And if he can pass this test and look great doing it and stabilize the blind side for Clifford, people are going to be talking about him when it comes to the draft, and they're going to be doing that more frequently. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Some other concerns, guys. I got to get to the linebacker position because we've heard it. This is the game finally that's built for linebackers. That was not the case the first 2 weeks. So to me, this is the moment where Tyler Elsden, Kobe King step up into the spotlight. Probably Abdul Carter going to get some run there. But Curtis Jacobs, a big moment for him. And then Jair Brown, who we've talked about in the past. This has been his new role, especially on third downs, getting up to the second level, filling that Mike linebacker role that could ultimately take an Elsden or a King off the field. But this is the moment for Manny Diaz and this linebackers. This feels like their big debut in a game where they're going to be counted on. And if they can't get it done, if they are exploited, that very well may be the topic of conversation coming out of the matchup.
Yeah, I think one of the good things for the linebacking crew is that they saw some really good athletes against Purdue. You didn't see the kind of power running game, obviously, because Purdue is more of a pass oriented team. But seeing Elsden and King running around out there trying to track down some of those speedy receivers and tight ends, that I think that was kind of a good test. But this is obviously the best test, and I think this game comes at a great time for them in terms of let's see where you are as the heart of the Big Ten or the meat of the Big Ten schedule starts to get kind of creep closer. But to me, that's a big concern. Obviously, I mentioned I'm beating the offensive line to death here. I'm sorry, but we got to see to believe it. But place kicker, I thought an alarm went off with Jake Pinniger in that game, and maybe I'm making too much of it, but I think if you look at his body of work going back to the late 1970s or whenever he started, I think the number is 11 of 19 on field goals between 40 and 49 yards for his career.
Mark, it's 10 of 20 from beyond 40. From 40 and beyond, it's 10 of 20.
Right, but I think if I go with the 40 to 49 only because we knew that he was never the 50-yard plus type of kicker. They were often bringing Stout in. So even on those, which, 50% is not good enough. You can't kind of explain that away. And then to miss an extra point as well. I actually like what James Franklin did and said, listen, I've had some issues with the line, letting guys through and whatnot. I think that's trying to get Jake Pinniger's head kind of where it needs to be. But you're looking at a game, last I checked, that Penn State was a -3 favorite. These are the kind of games where special teams could come in really, really, really big. And they need a veteran kicker to step up. Again, I will say this. It's a non-conference game. So if you're a Penn State fan, you want to hope that he gets an opportunity to hit a key kick or two because you want to know where you stand at that position heading into Big Ten because you know for darn well sure when you get into the Big Ten, sooner or later, you are going to need somebody to make big kicks. Whether it's overtime, whether it's the end of the game, whatever it may be, you're going to need people to make big kicks, and you got to know if you could depend on him. And I don't know that now that you can say that you can.
And you mentioned Pinniger not being the 50-plus yard guy. According to James Franklin, he now is at least 50, 51, and 52. And then beyond that, it's Sander Sahadak. And we'll see if they trot that out at some point. I think it'd probably have to be the end of a half, maybe the end of the game where we'd see that happen and basically a Hail Mary version of a kick from Sander Sahadak maybe. But with Pinniger, last time we saw him try it from 50 was against an SEC team, actually. It was down in Tampa at the Outback Bowl, and I think he missed about 15, 20 yards right. It was really, really bad kick. You're right. It's not going to be 46-10, and it's not going to be 46-10 moving forward in Big Ten play. So you're going to need to really be able to handle those margins of error, and if your kicker can't get that done, major concern. Mark, thanks for bringing that up, because if we didn't, people would have probably been on our case. Daniel, Mark, it's time to do your players to watch, and then we'll get into predictions. Daniel, you can lead us off. Who's your player on Penn State that you have in the spotlight here?
Well, it was going to be Jake Pinniger, that out of the way. I think PJ Mustipher, you talk about this Auburn rushing attack. You expect Tank Bigsby to really bang it inside. Penn State hasn't really played a team like this with its full complement. If you kind of discount the bowl game with what they're missing there, it's been a while. So you want to see how they hold up, how they respond. After Mustafa went out last year, there were a couple games where that run defense really had some issues. So you want to see if they can hold up and just how PJ can hold up. This is his third game back from the injury. We'll see how they rotate guys, if they, given the weather, if they rotate more guys, if they keep him out there. We'll kind of wait and see how he comes out of it. But I'd go with PJ just because I think that's the big matchup we're going to see with how Auburn runs the football.
Mark?
Yeah, I'll go with Curtis Jacobs, who I like to call the big dog just because he hustles. But listen, you're looking at, we talked a lot about the linebacker core. He's the one guy who's played a lot of football. You have two quarterbacks who, one more than the other, but both of the Auburn quarterbacks are willing to run the ball. And I think having a guy like Curtis, who has played a lot of football and can get in there in the box and keep an eye on those quarterbacks, I think he's a guy to really watch against that running game. And maybe the rest of the linebacking core kind of takes its cue from him. And then when he's not in there, who's been replacing him? Abdul Carter. So I think that spot, those two linebackers, I think really have to step up for Penn State in this game.
I'll go offense, guys. And if I told you before the season that through two games, Parker Washington would have six catches for 90 yards, you maybe would think there were some issues with the Penn State offense. Look, we've talked about the new guys that have emerged. Last week was essentially the vet treatment for Parker Washington. He got in, got some work done, returned some punts, four catches, 60 yards, and got to watch a lot of football, got to watch a lot of these younger receivers. In week one, it was more Mitchell Tinsley, two catches, 30 yards. He's the guy that I'm looking to see make some game-breaking plays. He was the best playmaker for Penn State in the Outback Bowl when they were pretty decimated across the field. He's the guy who rose to the occasion, was able to give them some juice when they were lacking it. I don't know if they're going to be lacking the juice this time around, but to me, he's a guy that whether you get the ball to him in short space or you're going long distance, I want to see him get involved. And I think they will do that. Maybe even get the ball in his hands on a handoff, because Auburn's going to have to account for a lot. We've talked about some of these new figures that weren't on the field in this matchup last year. Parker Washington was there and he's still there. And I still think he's going to have a huge season. I just think that through eight quarters, he's gotten buried a little bit because of some of the other names that have popped up. I like his chances to remind everybody about how special he can be come Saturday afternoon into Saturday evening down at Auburn. Guys, it's prediction time. And this is one where, again, Penn State favored by 3, and all of our predictions go pretty well beyond that. Mark, we'll start with you, and you're actually the narrowest gap, but we're all betting that Penn State covers the spread. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I got a 24-20 Penn State. I look at an Auburn team that really struggled to score against San Jose State, and I just don't know that they're going to be able to put up enough points. The Penn State offense, again, what's my concern? I really want to see how that O-line plays, but I think regardless, even if it doesn't have a great game, the skill players are good enough that Penn State's going to put up at least 24. Win by 4, barely cover, pick the under.
Daniel?
I went Penn State 26, Auburn 17. I think Penn State can get enough distance that it'll be a two-score game. And if Auburn does move the ball, I don't think they'll be able to quick strike as much. I think it'll be the longer, more sustained drives, and I think that that'll keep the point total down a little bit. But I think when you look at the quarterbacks, like I said earlier, you trust Sean Clifford more than you trust TJ Finley and Robbie Ashford, and I think that's the difference for me.
Yeah, trusting Clifford more than those guys is a major understatement in my book. I just really am not buying into that quarterback room at all. They've had, the transfer portal. They've been trying their different pieces. I don't like the weapons on the outside to really raise the play of that quarterback unit. And ultimately, I don't see them being able to unlock their running back room over the course of this matchup because of how their passing game is going to struggle against Penn State. So I went 31-17. I was initially actually maybe thinking 31-14. I'll give them a field goal here. I just think Auburn's going to struggle to score points in this matchup. I think Penn State's defense, they've tried some things out here in the first couple of games, but what is more intriguing to me is what have they not tried out? What is not out there yet for Auburn to dissect when it comes to Manny Diaz and the way he wants to scheme things up? I think we're going to see some new things unleashed in this matchup on the defensive side of the football, and I think they're going to be pretty good at penetrating the quarterback pocket. ultimately, I think that leads to some turnovers. They're going to win the turnover battle. Sean Clifford makes it 2 for 2 on playing sharp against this team. And we went long enough without talking about it. Drew Aller gets in the game some way, somehow, despite Sean Clifford's success. And we get a peek at him in action on the road in an SEC environment. Good opportunity for a young quarterback. And fellas, I'll just get to it. I think after this game, Saquon Barkley is the name I just went to. Nick Singleton is a national name, and people are going to start bringing up Saquon Barkley because this is the kind of setting in Jordan-Hare Stadium. If he can go wild a little bit, a carry or two that go long distance, yeah, could really set him up to very quickly be on that springboard toward national stardom. So 31-17, a 3-0 start, and then we're back in Beaver Stadium next Saturday. So, guys, appreciate it. Breaking it down every Thursday here, getting ready for the matchup. Safe travels down to Auburn. We have a bunch of coverage coming your way between now and kickoff. And, of course, during the game and after kickoff, we're back with a post-game podcast Saturday night. For now, though, get back to work. These guys got to get ready for their trip. I'm Tyler Donahue on behalf of Mark Brennan, Daniel Gowan, and our producer, Lance Glenn. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.